They called the all the awesome science fiction workshops life-changing, but with the pandemic, other things have changed, so we're going to be talking about that with author Gregory Ashe on I Should Be Writing. I don't know, it's a stealth episode, but we're in season 18.
Well, I should be writing. I should be working on my craft. I should be writing. I should be submitting my next draft. But I'm sitting home watching Doctor.
So, hi there. Welcome to I Should Be Writing. This is a podcast for wannabe fiction writers. I'm your host, Murr. I've turned everything upside down in my studio, and we're doing this on Saturday, which is also brand new, and I am here with a very patient Greg Ashe. Hi, Greg.
Hi. Thanks again for having me.
Sure. It is a Saturday stream, and we are here. I haven't written anything since Thursday, so my last update of what I've been up to is pretty much the same. Actually, what I've been doing is this, all the stuff you can't see and putting together stuff and all that. So that's been what I've been working on. And my good news is I'm updating my work area, which is awesome. So that's not a whole lot, but it's what's going on this Saturday. Greg, I told you about this work in progress and good news portion of the show. Would you like to contribute anything?
Yeah. I am working on the first draft of the final book in this set of mystery books I'm working on right now. So it's been kind of fun to put that together. And I sent out the arc today for book four. So, no, is that right? No, for book three. Once you have the schedule, like with that many things going out, it's hard to keep track. Book three's arc went out today, and I'm working on the first draft of the final one. So yeah, it's good stuff.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, thanks.
Congrats. If anybody, I know we don't have a huge chat right now. Actually, I am impressed with those of you who hopped on and came out to hang out with us. I really appreciate it.
Yeah.
Shard says good news. My good news is my beta readers got back to me already and they both enjoyed my story. It of course needs work, but they like it. That's amazing. Yeah. I'm hitting the yay button. We're hoping the yay button works this time. The A button works! The confetti's behind me, but I'll take it. That's awesome. Does anybody else have any good news? Going. Of course, you always can bring it up later on if you show up late. Or remember, if you're listening to this after the live show, you can always email me with good news and we'll talk about it the next stream. Because if you get good news, like a yay, like either acceptance or rejection, because here, Greg, rejections mean you're a working writer. And so we celebrate them. We know they suck, but we just try to celebrate that part of it. It means you're doing your job. You just haven't been paid for it yet. Christian Writing has good news that I have a story held at a pro market with my third Sifl qualifier, if accepted. That's awesome. We'll hope for you to get some good news out of that. Some other good news. Further good news. So that is for the yay section of the show. So, Greg, you are an author. You are a teacher, and you're a different kind of teacher, so you're a busy guy. So tell us a little bit about you and all the stuff you do.
I don't have much of a life, so that was a pretty good summary. I teach high school. In fact, I just recently kind of switched over to being a high school librarian, so I've enjoyed that a lot, but I'm still learning the ropes there. And I am currently kind of two-thirds of the way through an Odyssey winter workshop, which is kind of the smaller online version, online offering from Odyssey, you know, in January. And then I also write primarily mystery, but I do write some what I would call horror mystery, paranormal mystery. So yeah, that's kind of That's kind of me. Like I said, there, I don't have much of a life outside of those three things. That kind of keeps me busy.
Yeah, I imagine. So you had a book come out in December. And
that's right.
And you have another one that I forgot. Sorry. And I can't pull up the email because that will replace your video. So tell us about the one that came out in December and the one that's upcoming.
Yeah, that's so...
Prolific.
Well, I will say I am an indie or self-published author, whatever term you prefer. And I think my most successful series has been this Hazard and Somerset series. So I have kind of divided it into seasons. If you think of like seasons of a TV show. And mm-hmm. So I'm on season 3. And that's what I was referring to when I said I was kind of starting the draft of that fifth book. But book 2 came out in December, Custody Battles. This arc is one of the motors driving this arc is that the protagonists, they're a married couple, have a foster son who has kind of been dropped in their laps. And so,
that's
kind of one of the things driving both the mystery and the character in Custody Battles. And so then in February, in about 2 weeks, the next book comes out, Domestic Animals. And so, yeah, so that's kind of the trajectory I'm on. That'll wrap up with that fifth book later this year. And then I keep telling myself one of these days I'll actually write about a new character. So that might actually happen someday.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I'm going to make a note of that because I'm a professional. I do want to come back to that. If you say it, it's true. Like the friendly reminders that are really rude. Yeah, it's true. Okay, that's really cool. So I wanted to talk about Odyssey because if you get involved with... Once you start to learn about the science fiction community and you hear about these people who have gone to Odyssey and Clarion, and the other two Clarions are the like the big 6-week workshops. Mm-hmm. And there's the Viable Paradise 1-week workshop. And then, you know, there's all these things. And you hear about these amazing authors who have put their lives on hold and put in the money to do these intensive things. And, you know, just like my kid graduated in 2020 and she's never gonna have that. Mm. She's never gonna have a regular mm-hmm. high school, a prom or graduation because of the pandemic. And so mm-hmm. everybody's had to go virtual. And I just wanted to know how people were, if you're thinking you're on the trajectory of, I'm going to Odyssey in 2020 or 2021 or 22 even maybe. Mm-hmm. How are people dealing with that? Does it come up? Am I just like creating all this angst and it's not real or what?
No, I think that I think you're absolutely right that probably a lot of, especially that first year, I think people's expectations were probably, I don't know if dashed is the right word, but certainly it didn't turn out to be what they expected because that first year of the pandemic, it really was, I think, a quick pivot to try to figure out what was going on. And, you know, for those of you who have not had the pleasure of meeting Jean Covellos, she's just a fantastic human being and genius editor. But like, she also is a whiz at kind of planning an organization. So I think it all worked out fairly well. The next year, I think that was always going to be part of the plan. So the 2021 is when I went and taught for one of the weeks at Odyssey. And I think by then people knew that that was very much a possibility. But the interesting thing that I think came out of it, and you and I spoke a little bit about this before we started recording, is, you know, Jean got a lot of good feedback from participants that they wouldn't have been able to attend if it hadn't been offered virtually. And she had people from, you know, the year that I taught, she had people, zooming in from like India and like Denmark, you know, and so like people were like able to do some of this that they wouldn't have been able to if they'd had to travel. So what I understand, and people will need to take a look at the Odyssey website for more information, but that going forward, Odyssey is going to be exclusively online. There will not be the 6-week summer workshop anymore. And it's more of a mentored guided program instead of a fixed curriculum. And so I think, and I know, you know, for a fact that came out of the changes required by the pandemic. So I think Gene is really trying to see this as an opportunity.
That's great. I mean, that's the, one of the things I've said about the pandemic is, on this show, you know, I'm trying to guide new writers into their careers. Mm-hmm. And I don't lie about the fact that conventions help. They can't, mm-hmm. you know, you don't need them. I compare it to being tall in basketball. Do you need to go to conventions to help your career? No. But can it help your career? Yes.
Yeah.
So, and, but, you know, a lot of people tell me, like, I don't have the funds. I am primary caregiver to child or elder. Mm-hmm. I live far away, and it's just impossible for me to get to these places. And then once it went virtual, you still... Mostly you had to pay because, I mean, all the tech stuff and training and everything. But, you know, suddenly people who live far away or have children or whatever have got to have that opportunity. And no, the BarCon's still not the same, but it's better than what you had before. Right. And so I am really, I do hope that more people, especially like conventions, continue with this. Oh, and the whole ableism thing, I've been trying to feel for my fellow con people because they've been asking for accessibility like this for years and we're told mm-hmm. it was impossible. And then suddenly there's a pandemic and look, it's mm-hmm. possible. So I really hope people keep it up also for people who are just unable to come because of physical or mental health issues. We've got the people in the chat, Valerie Valdez, it me, I'm parenting and broke. Valerie, I really want to hang out with you at a con sometime. I really do. And sorry, Green is here. And Shauna, oh my God, Saturday stream. Yes. Yes. See, it's exciting. It's not, I didn't promote. It's stealthy and exciting. So welcome everybody to our stealth stream. Me and Greg talking secret stuff. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm not good at, like, the uncomfortable-ish questions. And I say uncomfortable-ish because it is uncomfortable-ish. It's not even that much. But as somebody who was privileged enough to go to a one-week experience, there are some things you get out of those that have to do with interaction that's not necessarily workshop. You know, you meet people who yeah. are along the same lines as you, and then once you're done with your workshops, you eat with these people and you chat with these people. So while I really do believe that Odyssey is going in a really interesting direction and I love how many more people it can serve, is anything being done to make up for that? Like, is there any?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Tell me.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'll say I can only kind of speak from that experience that I had, but you know, Gene really worked hard to create non-class Zoom opportunities for people to interact.
Oh, that's great.
And yeah, it's still not, I mean, what you're describing, kind of the intimacy of so much time trapped together, right?
Yeah.
Is you can't reproduce it, right? Like, and that's unfortunate. That's a loss.
Yeah.
But you can try to create as much of it as possible. And so I think that's what she's done. And I think, you know, there are those non-classroom interactions that are meant to be fun and silly and kind of, you know, the kind of thing that you might chat about over lunch or something, you know, when you're
right.
cramming in food between classes. So,
yeah. And I mean, I don't think anybody right now can deny that you can make friends online.
Right.
anybody who said it, they had to stop saying it around, you know, June, July, 2020. Just no, that argument does not stand at all.
Right.
So tell us a little bit about Odyssey. Let's start with the winter thing that you just finished teaching. If somebody went to the Odyssey site right now, mm-hmm. what could they sign up for? What could they get out of it right now?
So right now, applications are open for, or they might be right on the cusp of closing for the year-long online program that is the kind of replacement for the summer 6 week. And so now would be the time, if you're at all interested, to go to Odyssey's website, fill out the application. It's a limited number of spots. So we're not talking about like those virtual classes that have 3,000 people and they're totally anonymous, right? This is a, kind of select group that goes through an admissions process and then has this mentorship with Gene. And the other thing that I'll say about that is, if you're interested, if you go and you look, there are, I want to say six scholarships. You know, some people mm-hmm. see the price tag and they are concerned that that is not feasible for them, but there are scholarships that make it either completely free or very affordable. And again, if the year-long program is not something people are ready to dive into, you know, starting in the fall, you can look for the January workshop, which is what I'm finishing up right now. So, you know, like that comes around as kind of the winter program, and that might be a place to just kind of test the waters. It's only four weeks-ish, you know, and it's, you know, three classes, much lower commitment. Yeah.
Right. So the last like 6-week attempt was virtual and last summer.
That's right. That was the last one. Yeah.
So, but now it's like a year long thing.
Yeah. And I will say that because it hasn't been done yet, I'm not exactly sure what it's going to look like.
Right.
But yes, it's no longer, even last year, you know, 2021, it was 6 weeks where you were on Zoom for 6 hours a day or something like that.
Yikes.
You know?
Yeah. That's
yeah. And it's so even for people that could, had increased opportunity to do it, it still wasn't realistic for everyone, right? And my understanding of what's coming, although I haven't seen all the final plans for it, is that that is going to be drastically different. It's going to be okay. More of like on-demand recordings, you know, that you could play mm-hmm. at 2 a.m. when the kids are asleep or whatever,
yeah.
As well as kind of those opportunities for feedback and mentorship from like live instructors, but again, I think not with that strict schedule.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's very cool. So if anybody listening or watching right now thinks this sounds good, this sounds like it's for me, what's Odyssey looking for in a student?
Well, that's a great question. Yeah. And I think that they do ask for a writing sample submission. And so I think you want to kind of put your best foot forward the way you would if you were submitting to any publication venue, right? And I do think that Odyssey is probably most beneficial for people who have already done as much as they can to learn the craft of writing independently, right? It's not a great place to go and be like, you know, oh, well, you know, your character should be somewhat likable or deserving, right? Like, I mean, like, Gene does a good job of going through the building blocks of writing, but you probably want to, I think you may get in. I mean, I'm not on the admissions committee, right? Mm-hmm. But like, I think it would benefit you the most to say, hey, I really feel like I've pushed myself as far as I can. This is the logical next step, like the investment in myself as a writer, to help me, you know, do what I can't figure out on my own.
That's great. One thing I know you just said you're not on the submission team in that way, but I have to ask this because I've always wondered it. Is there anybody who you think is too far along in their career and they won't get anything out of it? Because nobody wants to get a rejection, but
yeah.
I mean.
Yeah. So that's a great question. Like last year, one of the students was a New York Times bestselling author
oh my God.
Who is also an extremely successful indie publishing author. So she follows both paths, you know, she's like one of the hybrid authors.
Yeah.
And she said it was like the best thing she'd ever done for herself. So, I
wow.
mean, and I don't feel like I don't want to say her name because I
sure,
don't
no,
think that that's
to.
Fair. But I was reading her submission and I was like, boy, that name sounds real familiar. And I Googled it and I really regretted Googling it because I was like, oh boy, you know, who am I to give feedback on this?
But, yeah.
But, you know, so I think that's the best way I can answer that question is, and to be fair, I think she was attending because she was interested specifically in learning more about how to write speculative fiction. She had kind of achieved that success in another genre. But you know, I think that kind of, as long as you know what you expect to get out of it, I think that
yeah.
for someone at any level, it could be a good fit.
One thing I'll never forget is when I got into Viable Paradise, I decided I wanted to know more about the whole workshop thing. And so I got Kate Wilhelm's book, I think it's Storyteller. And it's part memoir and part, well, part of the memoir is how she started Clarion.
Mm.
And it was just really interesting how, you're talking about people who were going there for only validation and got mad when they didn't get it. When they got critique, you know, like everything it says you're supposed to get out of a workshop.
Right.
And I thought, wow, who's like that? And of course I had, there was a woman in my workshop who was very successful in business, and she could not fathom the idea that starting a new career would not be a lateral move. She can't just go from like super awesome businesswoman to super successful author. It's like, it's a whole new thing. You got to step down and then climb up again. And she would not listen to anybody. She was angry and she left early, which,
oh boy,
here's the deal. This was on Martha's Vineyard. It's not cheap to get there. And it sure as hell isn't cheap to leave on a moment's notice. It's like, if your flight or your ferry is on Saturday, then it's going to cost you an awful lot to get off the island on Thursday. But she did. So I just always wonder about those people. Have you seen them online? Or do you think maybe they, do you think those people are going to be turned off by the online thing? Have you seen them? Don't name names.
Yeah.
We'll talk afterwards and I'll write all the names down. And... Okay.
Like one thing that I will say is, I don't know if this will continue in the new application, but in previous years when you applied to Odyssey, you had to get references from two writers, and they didn't have to be published writers, but people that you had shared work with, and they had to rate you on kind of your willingness to listen to feedback and kind of be a civilized human being.
Mm-hmm.
And I imagine that some version of that will continue. My experience has been kind of basically all positive with people in that setting, because I think Gene does such a good job of selecting the right people. Yeah. Like the worst it's ever been is like the person who is impervious to criticism and you're like, you really do need to fix that. And they're like, oh no, it was really good. Don't worry. But yeah.
So I want to go back to something you said. Like I said, I wrote it down. I wrote it down on my desk.
Yes.
Professional. Yeah. The instructions on how to put together my new desk. Because we had just talked about this in a previous episode, like a week or so ago. And that is, you said maybe you'll start writing about a different character. And I was kind of, it was one of those pontifications where I didn't actually come up with an answer, but I was wondering about the series with these characters and like with Star Wars, you get stories about the characters we saw on the screen, and you get a lot of other stories about other characters, and they seem to be doing pretty good either way. So, you know, in the Star Wars world, you can offer new characters in the same setting and people will be excited. In other cases, I know people have tried to expand with new characters or even just side characters, and it's kind of flopped because, and so I was just curious when you said write someone else other than this character, if you've thought about what keeps, would you be doing it in the same world or is this like something completely new, or, and tell us about the beloved characters. Where do you stand on those?
Let me follow up with that first before I forget. So when you say, tell us about the beloved character, do you mean the two that I write, have been writing a lot about? Is that what you're,
or yes, well,
is
that's
that a phrase?
That,
okay. So I think I mentioned that these are mystery books. My most popular, my most successful ones. It's about it's a small fictional town in Missouri. And it starts with one of the detectives coming back. He has lost a very good job on the St. Louis police force, which the reasons of which kind of become clear over the series. And then, but he got hired in his hometown. And of course, the first day on the job, he walks in and his partner is the person who used to bully him in high school. And
wonderful.
So these are, I primarily, not exclusively, but I think primarily write gay characters. I write most of my books are in the LGBT kind of mystery categories at different vendors. And so, it becomes a mystery series with a strong romantic subplot kind of running through the arcs. But for those of you who don't read romance, the bully love story redemption arc is pretty, it's a pretty common one, but it's a common because it's a great story and people really enjoy it. Mm-hmm. So that's that series. I think a lot about kind of characters. I really have tried to push myself away from saying likable characters, because I think that's not a broad enough term for the kind of people most people read about in commercial fiction. But I do like deserving characters. So I try to, think about, is this character, like, what's going to make me, because I had to spend the most time with them, and then hopefully whoever else picks up this book, root for them and want them to win, even if they aren't a perfect person. So the kind of stuff I'm brainstorming, almost all of my stuff, not the paranormal, but all the contemporary mystery, is in the same shared world, but kind of all over the place. And this would be a jump back. This would be something set in the mid to late 80s. So it would be a break in a lot of ways. And so kind of the issue that you raise of will readers follow me to that, is one that I've asked myself a lot. So
we got one person in the chat saying, love the books. Welcome, DeLorean.
Oh, DeLorean. Hi, it's good to see you.
A mystery and romance like PB&J, yes. Now, DeLorean says, you don't make it easy for the characters, which is what makes some redemption arcs too convenient to believe. You make them earn it.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. I will say that because I write these across series, it's a certain kind of reader enjoys them, and DeLorean's so nice. But some people do want those redemption arcs wrapped up in a single book. And I have tried to write stories about people who are complicated enough and situations who are that are complicated enough that it is more, I don't want to say glacial, but slower at least, that it takes place over several books.
Okay. No, Preemie, the doggos do not need a redemption arc. Not going to, yeah. You guys, I got to show you, I did, maybe I should have set up the green screen and doggo cam first, but I did come up with a doggo news scroll, which is this. Hopefully it will tell you all the dog stats. So that's going to be something you can turn on in the future, and hopefully I'll remember to change it every time. So.
Oh my gosh.
No food, no treats, no love.
Those poor doggos.
I know. We treat them horribly. Yeah. So I have to be completely selfish here. I am currently working on my new... my new series, and it's I talked to my editor and we made it, I just wanted to make sure that we're talking series, not trilogy, because mm-hmm. different arc structures for that. Mm-hmm. But one thing I'm doing is when you're thinking about a character who's going to be going through multiple books, and as I get it in these kinds of series, especially when they're mysteries, mine's a science fiction mystery. People want characters to change, except it's like in cases like this, they don't. Like Hercule Poirot mm-hmm. doesn't change. Miss Marple doesn't mm-hmm. change. Mm-hmm. There are some who do, as I understand it. I did read one popular series, but got bored around like the sixth. The sixth book, and then someone told me that's when the character started to change, and I'm like, okay, six books in, I just got tired. But when you have a plan for a character, how do you decide what to reveal and when? I mean, I always wonder when something huge comes out in like book four of something, it's like, did they plan that since the beginning, or is that just something that kind of organically grew?
That's a good question. I tend to not have, I'm trying to think. In most of my books, the character arc across what I'm calling my seasons, you know, like season one of this set of books, there's usually one character change, significant character change that I'm looking for. And so, and everything else stays the same, because I think you're right. I think people, for the most part, are reading because they want to have the same experience that they had with the first one. And so, like, there's that balancing act of, like, how do I let this character grow and become a better person, but still the same person in enough ways that the pleasure for the reader is still there?
Yeah.
So I think that I have, my process has evolved, and I have tried really hard to now to plan those reveals that you're talking about. I think as I was getting started, those were less planned, and it was, but I was also outlining and plotting significantly less at the beginning. But I think that even though it's harder to do it this way, I think in some ways it, the payoff is better, because you do have all of those nice little clues and hints that the savvy readers catch. And they are, I think for the most part, those readers are thrilled when they get the payoff for having paid attention that long.
Okay.
I don't know. What, I mean, yeah, what are you, are you planning on kind of plotting out those reveals, or what are you thinking you're going to do?
I'm a pantser. I'm
okay.
It's really hard for me to outline even one book. So, I do what I guess I call, it sounds so twee to say this seriously, but I kind of plant plot seeds to where I'm like, okay, she's going to mention an uncle here. Is that uncle going to come back in book six? Maybe.
Yeah.
And so, but you know, you've planted an uncle over here, and it might grow, and you plant a bad year at school over here. The kind of thing that if you never, if it never comes, if nothing ever comes of it, then fine. But if something comes of it, it'll be really cool because you mentioned it like that far behind, and you had a plan up the whole time, didn't you? And so I tend to do that. And I don't know how I remember them all. I've started making notes in Scrivener, but that's, I try to leave room in their stories to put new things, and just hope that the new things I come up with are consistent and don't require any retcons or hand waving.
Right. Right. Well, and I think that I would say, I think even with my kind of pretty rigorous at this point plotting, I, when I sit down to write, I try to be as open to that thing, those things as I can, because really, like, there is still no substitute for your subconscious kicking in and saying, hey, put something weird here, because you might use it later.
Yes, exactly.
And so I'm totally on board with what you're talking about. I think it's, it, for me, it's more of a, like, what does the one side of my brain do when I'm getting ready? And then he's out of the writing chair when I sit down, you know, and like, what's going to actually happen when I sit there?
Yeah. Okay. Christian writing, I'm going to need a follow-up. Today I learned that plant and uncle can mean two very different things in a murder mystery. are we talking about the weird plot thing I just said and then burying an uncle, or is there another thing you're talking about? Because I'm not fully aware. So if you guys have any questions, I can't even think of one thing, says Kate. Okay. If you guys have any questions for Greg in the chat about his work or Odyssey, please let us know. And yeah, we're going to, I think we're going to end the official podcast here.
Okay.
And then we'll do what my brilliant producer just decided was called, I should be writing BarCon, which is, we're going to be hanging out a little bit afterwards to talk a little bit more relaxed, a little bit less professional with the chat here. And if you're interested in at least experiencing BarCon and listening to it, you can support the Patreon and get this entire recording. But you can support the Patreon at patreon.com/mightymur, and I'm on Twitch usually, Tuesdays and Thursdays, 3 p.m. Eastern Time. And my website is merverse.com, where you can find out all the other stuff about me and all the other hats I wear. Greg, where can we find you online?
GregoryAsh.com. And my name, for those of you who are listening to this, has an E at the end, A-S-H-E. So GregoryAsh.com. And probably the best other place would be on Facebook. Same, Gregory Ash. So, yeah.
Great. The book is Custody Battles. And that came out in December, right?
That's right.
Awesome. So we'll have that information on the site in the show notes. And yeah, we'll talk to you guys later because you should be writing.
I Should Be Writing is available to you under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Theme music by John Anilio. Art by Numbers Ninja. Production by Summer Brooks. And hosting by Libsyn. Find all of this information and more at merverse.com. And remember, we can't do this without you. Thanks for your support.
Well, I should be writing. I should be working on my craft. I should be writing. I should be submitting my next. Watching the Doctor Who. I'm sitting home watching Doctor Who.